If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Please be seated. Now, before we dive into our text for this morning, to get a fuller picture, I want to step back to a few verses that we heard last week. Jesus asks his disciples, his closest friends and companions who have been with him this whole time, "Who do people say that I am?" They say that some say Jesus is John the Baptist, some Elijah, others say Jesus must be one of the prophets. Jesus then asks Peter, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter confesses that he believes Jesus is the Christ, the Messiah. Today, we pick right up from those verses. And for the first time in the Gospel of Matthew, we hear Jesus begin to tell the disciples very plainly what kind of Messiah he will be. One who will undergo suffering, who will be killed, and on the third day be raised. But as you heard, Peter is having none of this. In fact, he attempts to stop Jesus, to correct Jesus, to explain to him what it actually means for him to be the Christ. And just hold that for a second. How wild. Could you imagine Jesus hanging out with you and he's like, "Here's what I got to do today." And you're like, "I don't think so, Jesus. That's not it." Peter has correctly identified Jesus, but he has not yet understood what that identity actually means. He isn't rejecting Jesus. He doesn't walk away from ministry. He isn't saying, "I don't believe in you anymore." Instead, Peter is saying that cannot be what being the Messiah actually means. We can believe in Jesus and still have very firm ideas about what Jesus should be like. We want a Jesus who often confirms what we already believe, blesses our own boundaries, protects what we value, and assures us that the world can remain more or less as we know it and like it. Peter wants a Messiah who will make things better through the kind of power that Peter understands, by overpowering and overthrowing anything that stands in the way. But Jesus reveals that he is a Messiah whose power will be revealed not through human understandings, but through divine, through suffering and vulnerability, through a death and resurrection. So even though Peter rebukes Jesus, it seems that Jesus then turns around and rebukes Peter with the infamous line that so many know so well. "Get behind me, Satan," or as the King James Version, "Get thee behind me, Satan." Just has a different kind of attitude. But when we think back to last Sunday, Peter has just been called blessed for recognizing Jesus as the Messiah, and now Jesus tells him that his frame of mind has become an obstacle to the very mission that he has just confessed and has just named to give his life to. Jesus rejects Peter's definition and expectation of what it means to be the Christ. He says, "You are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." The cross has never been anything that Jesus romanticizes. He doesn't tell the disciples or Peter that suffering is inherently holy or that pain is proof of faithfulness. He simply tells them what is going to happen because of the path that he is choosing to walk. Now, we don't know how or if Peter even responds to Jesus or how he feels after being rebuked. We might be able to imagine how it would feel to be rebuked by Jesus. But Jesus doesn't leave Peter there in the awkward, uncomfortable. Instead, he turns to the disciples and he begins to explain, to help them better understand what following the Messiah, being a disciple of Christ, actually means. If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. In other words, to be a follower of Jesus isn't to go around seeking out suffering. It is about being willing to remain faithful when faithfulness becomes costly. That doesn't mean that every painful thing we experience is our cross. Again, Jesus is not asking us to remain in situations that harm us simply because they're difficult. The cross Jesus calls us to take up has to do directly with the cost of the work of following him. What Jesus is sharing with his disciples is that for those who want to follow him, we might say, self-preservation cannot be the highest or most important value. And I think we need to be careful, too, with that phrase, deny themselves. Because if we're honest, Christianity has sometimes used these words to teach people to ignore their own needs, to tolerate abuse, suppress their own humanity, or believe, again, that suffering is virtuous. This is not the freedom that Jesus is describing. Jesus is not asking us to deny our humanity. He is asking us to loosen our grip on our sense of self that feels like it must always be protected, defended, and preserved. To be clear, I don't think Jesus is talking about the healthy instinct that we all have to protect ourselves from literal harm. The kind of self-preservation I hear Jesus challenging is something a little bit different. The fear-driven impulse to preserve our lives, our comfort, our assumptions, and the world as we know it, even when doing so, comes at the expense of others. It can keep us from being vulnerable and being in genuine relationship. It can keep us from changing when change is very much necessary. And it can convince us that preserving what is familiar is more important than pursuing what is faithful. Self-preservation can sound a few different ways. Maybe you've thought to yourself before, I'm not sure things will change. This is just the way things are and how they're gonna be. Or maybe, you know, I don't think I wanna get involved in what's going on over there. Maybe you've wondered, well, I don't wanna say that because what if what I say is wrong? Or, well, I don't wanna do that because what will people think of me if I do? And sometimes it can sound very reasonable, like, but why should I be the one to change? It's very reasonable sounding. And y'all, hopefully, y'all know me well enough to know that I'm going to pause right here and say, asking these questions is not inherently a bad thing. Asking these questions is a good thing to do. The problem, though, is when they become ways of protecting ourselves from the vulnerability that transformation requires. And whether or not we want to admit it, we all have asked ourselves these kinds of questions and experienced this kind of self-preserving behavior to varying degrees throughout our lives. We tend to think that life is something that we preserve, something we protect, that we hold on to as tightly as we can. And Jesus suggests that there is a way of holding on to life so tightly that we actually prevent ourselves from receiving the life that God is offering. There is a difference between protecting our lives and possessing them. And perhaps discipleship asks us to release our grip even little by little, not because our lives have no value, but because they are already invaluable and are held in God's hands. Through this lens, we might hear Jesus inviting us into something deeper than just self-denial. We might hear something like, "Let yourselves be healed from the fear that keeps you clinging to what God is calling you to release. Be transformed. Come, follow me." Those who cling to what they believe must be preserved at all cost may very well miss the freedom that God is offering. But those who are willing to be transformed through Jesus and the gospel may discover a different kind of life is always possible. And this transformation is not simply about becoming a better version of yourself. This transformation is about forming us as a people. A people whose lives together can bear witness to the life of God's kingdom. People willing to loosen their grip on power, comfort, self-protection that keeps us from being changed, so that there might be room for God's life to continue to emerge. We can name Jesus correctly and still misunderstand the kind of Messiah he is. Like Peter, our lack of understanding and our instinct towards self-preservation can lead us to attempt to correct Jesus. We too often want Jesus to be the Messiah we want, and less often do we want Jesus to be the Messiah we need. The question isn't just whether or not we believe, is Jesus the Christ? Is Jesus the Messiah? It is whether or not we are willing to let Jesus actually show us who he is, even when he doesn't look like the Messiah we expect or the Messiah we want. The Messiah we want often makes us feel secure because he preserves our beliefs and our values and our perceptions. In other words, sometimes the Messiah we want can become the Messiah we create. But the Messiah that we need, that we all need, does not simply affirm everything we already hold dear. He holds us accountable and calls us out beyond ourselves. He challenges us to examine the fears, anxieties, and assumptions that shape how we move throughout the world. He's not asking us to become less human. He is asking us to become more fully alive. He invites us into relationships where we can be changed. Again, not because who we are now is worthless, but because God's work in us and among us is still unfolding. And this transformation is not something we accomplish by sheer force of will, although sometimes it feels like it. This transformation is accomplished because it is something we participate in. It is something that God has given us through grace that is already working and moving and transforming us. So today we are reminded of what it means for Jesus to be the Messiah who will suffer and die and be raised on the third day for the sake of the whole world. Peter hears the suffering. Peter hears the death. But Jesus insists that the resurrection belongs in the sentence as well. The cross is not the end. Which means that when Jesus asks us to loosen our grip on what we think we need to preserve, He is not asking us to embrace loss for the sake of loss. He is asking us to trust that God can bring life where we can't yet see it or even believe it is possible. And we are reminded what it means to follow that kind of Messiah. Not to seek suffering for its own sake, but to become willing to let go of whatever keeps us from the life God is calling us into as we continue on our pathway of discipleship. Peter gets Jesus wrong, and Jesus doesn't give up on him. The one who tries to correct Jesus will eventually become one of the people entrusted to carry Jesus's mission forward to the ends of the earth. Peter's misunderstanding is also, clearly, not the end of his discipleship. Instead, it becomes part of his own formation and his own transformation. Because God is still at work, even in Peter. And just like Peter, we will get it wrong. We will cling too tightly. We will sometimes choose the Messiah we want over the Messiah we need. But our misunderstanding and our choice is not the end, because Jesus continues to reveal himself, who he is, where he is going, all that he has to offer to us. He calls us forward, calling us to loosen our grip on what we think is power, what we think is certainty or comfort, and the self-preservation we think we need to hold on to so tightly, transforming us into disciples who trust that the life God is offering us is greater than the life we are so very afraid to lose. Amen.